Welcome to Threat Informed Cyber Defence, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Cyber Rangers. In this series, we'll focus on the acceleration and validation of cyber capability and resilience by discussing the virtuous circle of threat intelligence and threat-informed simulations to demonstrable, measurable abilities centred on next-generation cyber-ranging technology. To learn more about our sponsor, Cyber Rangers, visit cyberrangers.com. I'm your host, Charlie Osborne. Joining me today are Matt Weaver, VP of Business Development, USA at Cyber Rangers, and Antonio Johnny Martinelli, Director of Training at Grimm. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Always great to be here.
So to begin, can you just give our listeners a rough explanation of the specializations of your organizations? Matt, if you would like to start.
Sure. With Cyber Rangers, we're a next generation cyber range. And for us, what we've developed are some capabilities around hands-on experience-based training. We also have a marketplace. And for us, we've really been able to set ourselves apart from every other cyber range out there, really focused on those two capabilities. We've partnered with some incredible companies, including Grimm. And so we're excited to work with them. And I'm happy to be here with Johnny.
And Johnny, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about Grimm.
Sure. Over here at Grimm, we are really spearheading what we like to call bidirectional engineering within the critical infrastructure spaces. And that's to say that we handle both security assessment services as well as forward engineering to assist with remediation of any of issues that we have discovered, as well as from scratch development of any solutions that an environment might need. We work heavily not just with overall infrastructure, but with development of embedded systems, small systems. We're currently this year focusing heavily in the transportation space with electric vehicles and connected cars becoming, you know, headline news on the daily. That's really where we're doing a lot of work. So as I said, both assessments and engineering services being provided here at Grimm, as well as the department I head up, which, as Charlie mentioned, is the training department. We develop and deliver training for very niche skill sets, trainings that are often difficult to find in other spaces. For example, to go back to our transportation topic, we have an excellent course on automotive security and automotive embedded systems development security that discusses not just best practices for security, but why those best practices are important. And we do a lot of demonstration around offensive tactics and attack simulation and demonstrating, hey, here's why you're being told to implement this security measure. Often because what we see through our assessments is that people know the best practices and they're attempting to implement them, but because they don't understand why this is a best practice, the implementation often goes poorly, and that's where we see the breaches happen. So at Grimm, we're trying to take this 1-2-3 punch aspect and enable everyone to just do better out there to protect themselves.
And that is an important point to note when it comes to just how technology is evolving and it's moving at such a rapid pace. For example, the terminology we find in cybersecurity today is vast and it goes far beyond just network defense or data protection. We're now hearing of terms such as ICS, OT, SCADA, IoT, IIoT, and we're even thinking about and we're hearing about the use of drones for security purposes. So for the layman's benefit, why do you think these terms are becoming so important?
Oh, I would say in much the same way that the past years on the news, we couldn't go, say, a week without hearing about a security breach that leaked our personal data, you know, our credit card numbers, our addresses, our here in the States, we have social security numbers, you know, government ID numbers. It had become such a commonplace thing that it was something that was on the tip of everyone's tongue. Everyone is aware about it. I could talk to my mother about those things, or the reality was my parents would come to me about these things and say, hey, I heard this on the news, or this happened to me. What should I do? And now what we're seeing, especially with at least from the media I can consume here in the States, we're seeing since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, more of a focus on infrastructure security, industrial control systems, critical infrastructure being attacked not only by nation states, but more prevalently general ransomware attacks, things like that. And because this is affecting the average consumer, you know, when we have, say, an oil refinery company was recently attacked here in the States, and there was a massive scare about, oh, well, there'll be gasoline for our cars, and people were filling up trash bags with gasoline to make sure that they wouldn't run out. Yeah. And so we're seeing these things hit the headline news more. And so with the average consumer hearing these terms, this, of course, is going to trickle down into what everyone is talking about. And so I think that's my take on your question, at least.
And Matt, do you have any thoughts to offer on this?
I think he really kind of captured the essence of your question. And I would keep going a little bit further with just the fact that what it really did was it exposed a lack of training in this space. Because anytime you're having compromise and you start to drill down, well, how did that happen? You know, really recreate those types of incidents. You see at the core of this is that you end up with personnel that aren't being trained correctly.
And I think you'll find as well in the media, we hear a lot about, you know, IT-based attacks, sort of internal systems. We don't so often hear about operational technology, which for the benefit of our listeners is also known as OT. Gentlemen, what is the differences between OT and IT and the fundamentals of how attacks against ICS equipment is commonly carried out?
That is one of those questions where, while those terms have definite definitions, often the answer you get depends on who you ask, unfortunately. Right. So generally, for the sake of what we're discussing here, it's easy to split a production house into two halves, your IT half and your OT half. And if you consider the OT half to be the side of the house that runs the process, whatever that process might be it, I like to use the example of bottling beer. You know, is it the automated aspects of brewing and bottling beer that produce a product that then gets sold? Or, you know, if you live in a country where you have to pay for water or electricity from a privately owned company, you know, those companies have OT sides of the house that produce a product, and that product is clean water, that product is viable electricity. What I'm getting at is the OT side of the house is the side of the house that generates revenue. It's the side of the house that makes a product and it sells it. It makes money. The IT side of the house can never make money. Its job is not to make money. It's to provide supportive infrastructure for the company to be able to make money with whatever the means that company may have. And so certainly you may have a company that develops an application and that's what they sell, but IT doesn't develop the application. It just provides the support services. And so that's generally for the layperson, that's how I like to split it up. The OT side of the house is the side that makes the money. The IT supports the business. And that's, I think, the big difference there. There are, of course, on the OT side of the house, because of how that production happens, there's a lot of specialized machinery, robotics, kinetic computers, computers that effectively cause change within an environment, be it, you know, robotic arms or a simple filling bottles of beer, something like that. You know, they're causing physical change in these environments. You know, it's machinery, conveyor belts, etc. Whereas on the IT side of the house, it's your computers. It's your computers that we're all familiar with, your workstations, your servers. And now there are, of course, computers, workstations, etc., on that OT side of the house. You know, engineers have to use these workstations. You know, servers have to control and share and disseminate data. And so while there are bits of what we would consider IT infrastructure within the OT environment, this is how I like to kind of separate it, is what is it being used for?
I agree with that. Like, I think that he did a great job of really explaining that. And Johnny, you can kind of tell me what you think here. Do you feel like, hey, we focused on IT a lot, right? Cyber really putting into place these processes to protect the IT side of things. I don't necessarily know that we applied that set of rigor to the OT portion of this.
Yeah, I would say that because historically OT and IT have been very, very separated, not just electrically, you know, not just on that communication level, but culturally. The OT side of the house is, in many cases, akin to a factory, you know, whereas the IT side of the house is, you know, collared shirts and cubicles kind of a thing. And because what they're protecting, what their goals are so different, the cultures have just often clashed and they often haven't communicated. And it's been fine for a very long time. But unfortunately, as more of that IT equipment, as I mentioned, becomes commonplace within the OT environments, the risk is increasing because it's not being implemented properly. They're not being properly secured. And because the culture in the OT environments has not really been around computing security, usually because there was very little attack surface for which there was known vulnerabilities, combined with very few attackers targeting these environments, it wasn't really a concern. But now, especially with the advent of botnets and malware, specifically ransomware, targeting these things and IT being more integrated into OT for the purposes of telemetry, efficiency, you know, things that OT is very concerned with, you know, making the business run as efficiently as possible, making the profit margins as wide as possible. We've been integrating more and more computing because of that, but because we've been just throwing computers over the fence into the environment instead of properly implementing things while thinking about attack surfaces and who's coming after us and why, including, you know, again, those botnets who don't have a why. They just exist. And if you are available to them, they're going to attack you. You're going to leave yourself wide open. And I think that's really what we're seeing. You know, we like to talk a lot about nation state attacks and Russia, China, et cetera. But with the reality of what we're seeing here is that there's much larger threats out there that are all the way down to organized crime groups, right down to attacks of opportunity. And those attacks of opportunity are the most common. But because I think perhaps they're the least interesting, they're the least discussed.
And in light of that, what are the defensive methodologies and considerations you would suggest, being experts in your field, to help mitigate these forms of attacks or risks?
What we found as it pertains to cyber ranges is that nothing replaces hands-on training. Right? Like, to me, is being able to digitally twin, being able to protect, attack, and getting that hands-on experience, and then working on real-world scenarios. I think these types of things are where we excel. And we leverage the really smart people. We leverage the Johnnies of the world that can come in and deliver this world-class training. And so to me, like, I feel like that's one of the main efforts there, is just getting hands-on training. And it's a perishable skill, right? It's just, you need to put in the time.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of highly intelligent people on the OT side of the house, I think what happens a lot in that IT-OT culture war is because these are two groups of people who have very deep understandings of two very different types of technologies, it's easy for one group to just write the other off as, oh, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. When the reality is that both groups are exceptionally intelligent and very well skilled oftentimes in what they're doing, which also means that it's not that far of a logical leap to expect them to learn anything new that's needed in order to protect their environment. And on the OT side of the house, I see plenty of engineers who are now being tasked out of nowhere, you know, after 20 plus years of working as an OT engineer, now they're tasked with cybersecurity within their environment. And they go, "What? I've never even heard this word before. What do you mean I'm tasked with this?" And these are exceptionally intelligent people who really know their stuff, and a little bit of training goes a very long way with them, especially with the threats that we're looking at in these environments. You know, getting trained up on understanding the attack surface of your environment, I think, is the number one thing to learn about. Where and how can your environment be attacked? And with these OT environments, the threats that we're dealing with, you know, the attack surface vulnerabilities that we're seeing are a decade or more old, oftentimes. These are solved problems. And that's great because it means you can learn about what you're seeing out there. And there's already a solution in most cases. And in many of those cases, the solution is free and doesn't often require much, if any, downtime. I would say the number one issue I see from a security standpoint is a lack of asset inventory around the IT infrastructure that exists within your OT environment. When we look at what's being attacked, you know, what was the point of ingress? Where did the breach happen? Or what was taken down? You know, let's use ransomware again as the most common example. What was taken down with the ransomware? Well, it's the Windows machines, you know, it's the IT infrastructure. We don't have RTUs getting ransomwared. We have Windows machines. And how did that happen? Well, it's often just because we have these machines floating around the environment. They don't have basic security enabled on them. They're not running any kind of anti-malware applications on. The end users are allowed to do whatever they want with these machines. And these are basic things that we can fix sometimes relatively quickly without interfering with the process. That's the big pushback we get from OT is like, oh, well, it's going to mean downtime. We have to wait for the change window. It's going to slow everybody down. It's going to make it so I can't do this or that. And with the basic issues that we're trying to fix on this side of the house, one, it's really easy to learn about them, to understand how the attacks work and understand how to defend against them. And two, those defenses are often, in the grand scheme of things, easy to implement, easy and cheap to implement, because again, we're not dealing with complex attacks of 2023 in these environments. We're dealing with, you know, the basic attacks of 2013. And so again, yeah, going back to just, we know, you know, if you're an OT engineer listening, we know this got dumped in your lap. We know that yesterday, this may not have been your job. And now you're being told that it is. And boy, do I get that. But the upside is that while it may seem overwhelming, what's at stake here is a lot of basic things. And it's going to be pretty easy to get yourself and your team up to speed with just a bit of training from whatever that source may be.
I'm glad we touched upon assets and what people already have, as it's often the case that operators either have or they think they must spend a fortune on multi-year projects in order to add cybersecurity capabilities and value. But what sort of assets might they already have to leverage today and perhaps for free that they might not be considering?
They've got these Windows machines in their environment. I don't mean to pick on Windows, but this is where we're seeing the breaches happen. And it's because it's the most common platform and thus the most attacks have been created to target these systems. They just need some basic, you know, if you take a look at the cyber maturity model or some kind of cyber maturity framework, take your pick, all of the most basic functions that get you to from what might be called a level zero to a level one are something that you can often do with configurations of these systems. You know, not purchase anything, not installing anything in your data centers. It's often a matter of, you know, if you're running modern operating systems, modern being, you know, in the past 10 years, making sure that the default anti-malware application that comes with that operating system is enabled. You know, you may think that, like, you know, free means that it doesn't do anything, but it does something for sure. I mean, Microsoft's Bitdefender is something that's built into Windows and has been built into Windows for a long time. And honestly, it's very good. Just turn that on. Turn on the local host's firewalls. Integrate your Windows machines into a Windows domain so that you can have a central point of management for those machines. You don't need to go to each workstation in your environment and manually turn things off and configure all sorts of stuff for each user. It's very easy to set up a Windows domain and a domain controller. It's, you know, IT folks like to make that sound like it's some massive part of their job. And, you know, perhaps in a global 100 enterprise, it is a huge, difficult process. But in these OT environments where you may be dealing with dozens of Windows machines, you know, at most, maybe 100, certainly under 1,000, it can be very easy to set up a Windows domain for the management of all those machines to make sure that you have consistent security policies pushed across those machines. And even then, you know, I use phrases like security policies, and that can make a lot of people's stomachs turn because they don't know anything about security policies. And oh no, here we go. It really is the stuff you already know, because it's the stuff we're taught in our security awareness training. It's make sure that your users have to use complex passwords. Make sure there's passwords on the machines. Set lockouts for if an engineer walks away from the machine for too long, that the password has to be used to unlock it. You know, make sure, as I said, that anti-malware is on and running and updates itself. Make sure the machine updates itself with security patches from Microsoft. You don't even necessarily have to be running a Microsoft update server in your environment if you're okay allowing these machines to talk to the internet. And in many cases, I see they are allowed. And so those machines can go right to Microsoft and get those updates. Just make sure that's turned on and they're doing it. It's these basic things that we already know as computer users. You just make sure that those are happening in your environment. These are the flaws that we're seeing. It's not, you know, these deep supply chain vulnerabilities and application vulnerabilities and PLC vulnerabilities. Certainly those are important. Certainly those are things that are targeted by more intelligent attackers, you know, more intelligent threat groups and nation states, et cetera. But they're going to go after the lowest hanging fruit first. They're going to do the easy attack first. And as the need for more complex attacks increases, the number of threat groups who can carry out those attacks drops off significantly. And so what that means is everyone out there is looking for the easy hacks. And so if you can defend against the easy hacks, you can stop everybody. Who's going to come back? Most likely nobody, depending on who might target you and what you do. Statistically, certainly nobody. You know, you're going to go from random botnets on the internet with no human brain that can effectively attack you and ransomware your organization. You can get rid of those very easily, very fast with the recommendations that I have. And then what's left is the very, very, very sparse few threat groups who are actively targeting individual organizations. And perhaps, you know, I'm not sure who's listening right now. And, you know, if you're running, say, an electricity utility, you may be targeted by a nation state. If you're running a beer bottling plant, you probably won't be. You know who threatens you and understand, you know, how much money and time they're willing to invest into taking you down. You might quickly realize that it's easy to defend against those who might seek to do you harm because they're often not directly targeting you and they're using very basic attacks. It's not that bad is what I'm getting at.
You really captured something that I thought was really cool was there's so many free kind of tools, lists, checklists, like, are you doing these types of things? CISA puts out some great content. If you look at some of the CMMC stuff that's out there, if you're a small defense contracting or medium-sized defense contracting company, those are easy kind of checklists to run against your existing infrastructure. So to me, like you had mentioned, there's a lot you can do for free that's just out there from trusted sources.
And on that note, Johnny mentioned level one cyber maturity. So Matt, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on why you think achieving, at the very least, this first grade in the framework is necessary for organizations today.
I think I'm going to throw this to Johnny, but I'm going to leverage what he just kind of captured. And that's that at that initial layer is they're really focused on securing your infrastructure against nascent old attacks that just happen thousands of times more than that a day, but they're just consistent, persistent efforts that they're just low hanging fruit. And so really what we're trying to do is just get a baseline of security across your enterprise that's to say, you know, just do this, right? If you just do these basics, you're already in a great place. Now we can start building to what Johnny said earlier is now you can start to look at some of the, you know, where are they going to get, what's my attack surface? Who's interested in shutting me down or would have interest in, you know, ransomwareing me and that sort of thing. Like if you don't make a lot of money, there's, you know, you can't, you know, get blood out of a turnip, so to speak, right? The point is though, is that let's just get the basics done. And I think that's really where that focuses that effort.
Yeah. I'd like to comment on the, you know, going back to the ransomware and the you don't make a lot of money concept. A pushback I hear a lot is, well, nobody's going to come after us. We don't really have anything worth coming after us for. And I really do need to once again hammer home that idea that much of this ransomware is crimes of opportunity. You weren't targeted. They don't know who you are or who your business is. It's garbage that was spewed across the internet that someone in your environment allowed in. And now your company, which, you know, you may just be spinning up, you may have a target of generating a profit within the next 3 to 5 years. So right now you have nothing. What does that mean? All this means that you can still get ransomware. It does not mean that you are any really less targeted as far as statistics go. And it means that your risk is much greater because you can't afford to have that happen this early, you know, or at this point in your business. You know, the economies are bad all over the world. You know, perhaps your business is struggling right now, but you're, you know, hoping for a turnaround soon. This is the exact point in time you don't want to get hit with something that's going to take everything down and leave you unable to do anything for 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, I've seen. It's important for everybody, regardless of what your company does. We have really streamlined so much of these processes because, again, this is going back to this is a solved problem. And solved problems means they're easy to implement, even not just on you buy this, you do this, but bringing in other organizations to do it. And there's so many organizations that out there competing too that you can often find somebody that's, you know, within whatever your budget might be. Now, you do, of course, need to do that due diligence and keep an eye out for those who are just willing to do almost nothing for almost nothing. There are plenty of those folks out there who are going to say, what do you have, $50? Sure, I'll do $50 worth of work, and it's not going to get you too much. But as, say, an OT asset owner, an OT operator, you don't know what $50 worth of work is. Is it enough? Is it not enough? This is where I see a lot of the problems happening, too, is knowing the response is, well, how much should I spend? You know, that's always the easy question. Should I get a $200,000 pen test or a $250,000? And the reality is you have to, you know, ask for, if we're talking about assessments, ask for past reports. Any good assessment organization will be more than happy to hand you a cleaned up report. It's going to be, you know, anonymized, but take a look at those reports. Say, is this what I want? Would this be helpful if I was running the organization that this report was handed to? And if so, yeah, there you, now you've found a great match. if they say that they don't have any reports they can send you because of confidentiality reasons or whatever, that's often, you know, something they're doing to try and, I don't want to use words like con, but that's often a red flag to look for. That maybe that they're not the organization for you. Just ask for past work. Go, hey, what do you guys know? And just talk to them about OT. You know, make sure they're not just coming in and just doing an IT asset penetration test or assessment. There's a lot of IT assessment firms out there trying to get into the OT world by saying, hey, we do OT as well. And all they do is come in and just look at the IT assets in your OT environment. Just have general OT conversations with them. If they're a good organization, they're going to be more than happy to have 3-4 phone calls with you. They're going to be more than happy to hand over reports for you to look at. They're going to be happy to just chat with you. Anyone who gets too pushy, who only wants to have one call, who doesn't want to give you anything, those are all red flags of somebody who's trying to get their foot in that door, to go all the way back to the very first question on this podcast, which was, why are we hearing these terms so much? Well, the assessment firms are hearing these terms a ton too and saying, hey, that's a money-making opportunity. Let's get our foot in that door. And unfortunately, they're not coming with the understanding, the knowledge, and the subsequent respect of your environment. So it's really critical to make sure that you hire somebody who has experience in that realm to come in before you let them touch anything in there. The downside is you're going to find it's very few firms that know how to do that. But certainly we do. Happy to have that call with you.
And this dovetails quite nicely onto my final question for both of you. Aside from performing due diligence, what kind of competencies do employers require today to operate effectively in hybrid OT, IT, and context?
I paused. I wanted you to jump on that. This is your wheelhouse.
Well, so when I look back at IT as a whole, what I'm seeing happening in OT right now is what we saw happening across all of the, well, many of the other industries in the past, since about, you know, 95, Y2K, somewhere around there. And that is to say, we saw IT kind of getting its tendrils into all aspects of work across all industries. You know, for those of us of a certain age, we'll remember a time when we would use the term do computers, like, oh, I do computers, or let me talk to my nephew, he does computers, or this person knows computers. You know, this is an old colloquialism. And now we no longer use that phrase. And why is that? It's because, well, everyone uses computers. Every industry uses computers. You can't work in a retail environment without using computers. You know, all of our parents, perhaps grandparents, have tablets now, at the very least, that they use. IT has infiltrated every aspect of our lives and every industry. And what we're seeing now is that IT is being more intensely incorporated into these OT environments that, as I was mentioning before, had very little IT, or very little that they would consider calling IT. And while this IT is now being integrated for two purposes, one, increased efficiency, which is, you know, critical to operating any business, and two, monitoring and alerting for these cybersecurity incidents. You know, if we look again, I apologize, I constantly reference US standards. That's just where I live and that's where I have the most familiarity. In the US, we have an organization called NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, and they issue computer control requirements to anybody who wants to run an electric utility. And previous versions of that said, hey, we need an absolute air gap between IT and OT. We can have no communication between those two environments because IT is dirty and we can't allow the dirtiness that gets in and floats around there into our OT environment. The newest version of these requirements now actually mandates that there be IT-OT communication. And they've done a good job of saying how that has to be done securely. They lay it out directly instead of just saying, oh, it has to be secure, and then letting you figure out what the heck that's supposed to mean. The bottom line is they changed this. They issued this mandate in order to ensure the capability of monitoring and alerting inside of the OT environments. And so as far as taking on new skill sets or new capabilities within the environments, that is the purpose of everything I think that we're trying to do here, is to bring up your staff, bring up your computing environments in a way that allows it to monitor for cybersecurity incidents of any sort and alert on them. And of course, that alerting then requires a reaction. And we use this phrase, monitoring and alerting. And you go, well, you're forgetting the third step, which is to react. And I really want to push that, because you know, the alerting is usually where that process stops in most organizations, and that, you know, those alerts pile up, nobody responds to them, nobody tunes them. You know, we get this alerts, we get so sick of seeing them because they're always false alarms, but you have to go fix the false alarms. You have to make sure those don't happen again. You may have to bring someone in, you know, even just one or two additional people to handle the cybersecurity monitoring and alerting and maturity of your environment. And that's going to go such a long way, but you have to make sure you're doing it properly. You have to make sure you're not just buying something that claims to secure whatever it may be you're securing, because there is absolutely no product out there whatsoever. Nothing exists that will automatically handle the monitoring, alerting, and response to anything in your environment. It doesn't exist. I pray that one day it will exist in our lifetimes, but currently it does not. And that means that you will have to have somebody whose job it is, and that might be a full-time job, to handle that. The upside is, as technology progresses, that may have been something that required five people, you know, five FTEs. Now it may require one to two, depending on the size of your environment, what you're protecting. But just be aware that it's not just a matter of implementing controls. It's a matter of monitoring for violations of those controls and responding to those violations. Because it's often false alarms, that response is to go and figure out, why did this create a false alarm? How do I stop this from being a false alarm next time without sacrificing security control in the face of that? You know, because certainly you could just turn it off, but that's not helpful. So that you don't get this alert fatigue. How do we keep these false alarms from happening so that when a real alarm comes in, we know this is real, we need to react appropriately? I think that's the number one answer I have to that. This is the accepted reality. And the upside is, like I've been saying, this is a solved problem. There are direct answers to this that have been tested and tested and tested and tried and true for these situations. And as an OT engineer, having cybersecurity dumped in your lap, you have the benefit of tried and true tested solutions for whatever your problem is out there. IT took the bullet for you. IT made all of the mistakes. You watched IT made the mistakes and you laughed at them and you said, keep that garbage out of here, please, for a long time. And that was likely the right decision. But because IT made all the mistakes, they learned a lot of lessons, and you get to learn those lessons. You get to take advantage of those lessons that IT has already learned instead of making yourself learn those lessons. And I think that puts OT in a really, really great, quickly actionable place as far as cybersecurity is concerned.
Well, this has been an incredibly interesting discussion, and thank you both for joining us today. For more information and advice, how can our listeners reach you?
You can reach me at our website at grimcyber.com, and I am antonio.martinelli@grimcyber.com if you want to reach me directly, or just click on the training link and fill out the form on our website, and you'll get to us and you'll get to me one way or another.
And I'm just Matt, M-A-T-T, at cyberrangesplural.com. And then, as you mentioned to start off the podcast, we're at cyberranges.com is our website, so you can reach out there as well.
Threat Informed Cyber Defense is brought to you by Cyber Ranges. Cyber Ranges delivers world-class cybersecurity training and capability development exercises using next-generation technology and services for the design, delivery, and management of simulation-based deep dive experiences in cybersecurity. To learn more about our sponsor, Cyber Ranges, visit cyberranges.com. Listen to all our podcasts at cybercrime.radio.